What are you doing, Jordan? Mustard. Jordan is writing mustard.
Oh, you're recording.
I am. On the chalkboard that's next to him.
Well, yeah.
Very, very small, I might add.
It's very hard to write that small with chalk.
I had a hard time reading it because it kind of all blunt. It
made
me
feel all shivery. I feel bad now.
You did. I feel gross. You did put the chalk to the chalkboard, make a very small move, and then you retreated. and then you got the gusto to go back. Yeah. So
bravery is something that I've learned in my life. All the things I've been through.
To make it through the chalk feeling.
You got to get what you want.
Yeah.
And you got to be brave.
Great.
All right. I guess that it's time to start.
I'm leaving it to you.
What?
What? Was that, did I miss a cue or something?
What do you mean miss a cue? About?
Were you like waiting for me to start it?
No, I just was, I was considering who I wanted to start it, and my mind was going like, I think I'd like CJ to start it. And then I'm gonna leave it to you. And so I said, what? And here we are. Hello, and welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about big movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan.
And I'm CJ. Jordan here is our studied and credentialed critic.
And CJ is our resident nerd wearing his DC Universe letter jacket.
It's true. What it looks like.
With a Thor's hammer pin. That's not a Thor's hammer pin. That's actually
Harley Quinn.
I was gonna say that.
Were you?
I was gonna say that's Harley Quinn's mallet.
It is Harley Quinn's mallet. The pin was designed by my wonderful wife.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they gave it away at like an event thing that we had.
Man, that's so cool. You guys are so cool.
Isn't that cool?
It's actually sort of upsetting how cool you are.
I'm sorry.
I feel like I cannot keep up.
I mean, it's if you saw what I did day to day, it would be a lot less cool. Yeah. It's a lot of spreadsheets.
What's cooler than spreadsheets,
CJ? It's a lot of copying and pasting.
Nothing is cooler than spreadsheets.
Although my desk is just decked out with toys.
I'm not going to get into any details because I believe that it would actually lose us, our audience, for how...
What? No, I'm the nerd!
For how boring it is. But I will say that I did spend a good part of my day today copying and pasting, so...
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah. That work...
Oh, you're not going to get into your job?
No.
Yeah, it's surprising how often... We actually read...
Most of our work is just copying and pasting.
And apparently the guy who created the copy and paste just recently died.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
Moment of silence for him.
Everybody uses that. Everybody uses it every day.
It's kind of sad we don't know his name, though.
It's probably used like dozens or hundreds of times a day by almost everyone in the world.
I mean...
Well, I mean, that's maybe an exaggeration. Anybody who uses...
A computer.
Like a word processor of any kind, including text messaging. I use it on my phone constantly.
Yeah, copy and paste, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, all right. Well, this is not a copy and paste podcast.
Although, fascinating.
We did sort of copy and paste one episode back with Frozen 2.
That's true. That is true.
Anyway, so today we are actually talking about The Call of the Wild. This movie...
You said that like that's the official name is The Call of the Wild.
Yes, okay. It is The Call of the Wild. I looked it up a couple of times because I was not certain.
Yeah, I mean it. The first "the" feels...
It feels redundant.
It does.
It feels like an excessive number of articles.
Call of the Wild.
Yeah.
The Call of the Wild, not The Call of the Wild. I don't know.
It's a mouthful.
A struggle.
Anyway, just for a little context, I saw this alone on a Monday afternoon.
I saw this alone on a Monday evening.
Oh, there you go. Was your theater, were there people in the theater?
No.
No, yeah. Not for real, me either.
To be fair, it was usually I am it's AMC through and through, right? But I was in a very specific circumstance that I could not get to an AMC theater.
Oh.
So I went to a theater And I was like, oh, cool, this is the nearest theater. I have to be really fast. I go to the theater. I get off the exit from the highway, and it is bumper-to-bumper traffic. And I was like, what is going on? What I didn't realize was that the theater I was going to was across the street from the Staples Center, and there was an L.A. Clippers game. So when I got – I barely walked in as it was starting, and I was kind of on, like, an emotional – like, a really tense high of, like, oh, it was really stressful to get here. So it took me a second to, like – I was, like, annoyed by the movie. Like, you made me come here, and it took me a second to calm down.
That's pretty funny. I actually was late.
Were you?
Yeah, I was just a couple of minutes late. You'll have to tell me. I came in. I guess this is not a spoiler because it's literally the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
I came in when Beethoven, Buck was ruining a wedding feast.
Yeah, I mean, you missed the very, very beginning. But he was a rambunctious dog.
Right.
That was all you needed to
gotcha,
know.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, great. All right, well, I think we're ready to get started.
Let's do.
So the interesting thing, I'm going to just talk just briefly about the writer and the director. The director's name is Chris Sanders, and his claim to fame is lots of animation writing and producing credit. He also directed Lilo and Stitch, which was where a lot of or most of his writing and producing credit comes from, because there was a lot of Lilo and Stitch material that came after the movie,
yeah, totally.
And he was involved with a lot of that stuff. He also was involved with How to Train Your Dragon. I think he may have directed How to Train Your Dragon and The Croods. So this is actually his first, I want to put live action in quotes. This was his first live action movie. And it kind of makes sense because it's a bunch of animated dogs. So
it feels animated.
So I think, you know, I mean, without knowing anything about the movie, even if I hadn't seen the movie, I should say the objective perspective of whether or not Chris Sanders is a good choice to direct this movie, I think it is, because, you know, if most of your principal characters are dogs, or especially your principal character is a dog that is entirely animated, then I think it's a good choice to have an animation director to do that.
And oddly enough, with Stitch and with Toothless, there is a lot of conveying emotion without words, mm-hmm. which is entirely what this movie is.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's a good choice. And then it was written by Michael Green, who notably shares credit on Blade Runner 2049, which makes me think maybe there's a Harrison Ford connection.
That would make sense.
I'm not sure exactly what that connection might be. It might just be shared management or a representation, but yeah. You know, who knows?
Yeah, and then it's pretty much starring Harrison Ford.
Yeah, so we've got Harrison Ford as John Thornton,
but
or
like,
Thornton, if you're saying it like an Irishman.
But like not... I mean, it's...
So we'll get into that.
Okay.
Omar Sy as Perrault. Kara Gee as Francois. And then Dan Stevens is in this movie, which is a bit of a spoiler, but I'm not going to talk about it yet. And then, of course, Bradley Whitford at the very beginning is Judge Miller, exciting me.
There was a couple cameos.
But then he's gone.
There's also Karen Gillian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Karen Gillian was in it for like a couple seconds.
Some fun little cameos in there.
Yeah. I was like, anyway, we'll talk about those characters because they feature importantly. But before we do that, should we give our little bit of a spoiler free?
Yes.
Recommendation or not recommendation?
Yes.
What is your overall feeling, CJ?
My overall feeling, this is going to come into play many, many times in this conversation, and that is, again, for the first 20 minutes or so, I took a second to calm down. I was very resistant to the movie.
Yes.
And then I had somewhat of an emotional and a mental switch, which was, 'cause the CGI is not good. The dog.
Yeah, it's off-putting.
It is off-putting, especially at the beginning. It's you like get kind of into it.
Maybe wouldn't be off-putting if it was an animated movie.
Yeah. So the CGI is like, pulls you out.
You don't love it. You're never going to love it.
Yeah. I mean, you get used to it, so it gets better, but especially at the beginning.
You learn to tolerate it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But once I kind of changed my mind of like, okay, this is not a live action movie.
Yeah.
This is a cartoon kids movie. Once I kind of came to that realization, I really enjoyed myself.
I had a very similar experience.
Did
actually.
You?
Yeah. I wouldn't say I went in. I went in kind of blank slate. I was not expecting a great movie, but I wasn't expecting anything. I was just like, I'm here to see the movie that I need to see for Nerd Critic. Like,
I would not have saw it otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not going in with a bad attitude or a good attitude. I was like, here I am to see a movie. I was looking forward to seeing Harrison Ford because I'd be crazy not to.
Sure.
I was not looking forward to the CG dog, but I was like, you know, I was prepared. And I think at some point, and I'm struggling to remember the exact point, but at some point it occurred to me that I was watching a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And from that point on, I didn't have a bad time.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bad time.
And neither did I.
There were a couple of emotional moments, and you know, there was some genuine fun.
I was a little bit surprised at the emotion, like the moments that the victories and how much they meant to me. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, in the moment of feeling the victory, I was like, oh man, I'm like, this is, it's kind of surprising that I feel this way. And then the emotional moments as well. I don't know. You just, if you go in expecting a kid's movie, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I do. I think that if you are expecting a very sort of almost, I would say, traditional children's movie, like this feels like a Disney,
like,
sort of.
I'm going to compare it. Yes, like,
but like an old school, like Homeward Bound-esque,
totally,
type thing.
So yes, in subject matter, but also like feeling wise. Did you ever watch Balto? Oh, so apparently I figured this out. Balto, there is like a really clear cut line, because I have like friends and family that are like 4 years older than me or plus, never saw Balto. Anybody within 4 years of me, all of them have seen Balto. It's a very clear-cut line. But it's very much like Balto, where there are some like thrilling moments for a kid. Like, as a kid, that those thrilling moments were like really kind of dark. Like, whoa. Like, yeah. So, but then there's really emotional moments, and it felt really real for being a cartoon. This one's going to feel fake for being live action, but it kind of exists in both spaces.
That makes sense. I want to say, I think the last thing I want to say is that the one of the great saving graces of this movie is that none of the animals speak.
Yeah, it was a good choice.
That's really, really good.
Nor do you get any like inner dialogue of dogs or anything. There's no thinking. It's entirely the animation or the CGI that you're following.
There are some problems that we'll talk about. This isn't giving anything away. There's a lot of narration from our boy Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And it's not great.
No.
and we're going to talk about that. But there's no talking animals. And I found myself respecting what the film was doing from just a scene to scene, kind of like an acting perspective. You know, these animated animals doing what they were doing and communicating what they were communicating without any actual dialogue. That's really good animation stuff. So I appreciated that a lot. And not just like technically, but like emotionally. Like it worked much better because of that.
And again, you have to view it as a cartoon, because like these dogs, especially Buck, the main character, is too smart. Is not a real dog. He draws conclusions.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very logical. No. So you have to look at it as an animated movie from that perspective.
Yeah.
But that makes the emotional moments work really well, because if it was just a dog who was as smart as a normal dog, it would have been bland. So.
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the, right. let's go ahead and spoiler alert from this point forward. Although, I mean, it's called Wild. I mean, this is not like a.
Yeah.
This is not an unknown property. But anyway, from this point forward, we will not be careful. So once again, Harrison Ford, always impossible not to like. However, unfortunate that he was only in half the movie.
Yeah.
That was a surprise for me.
Yeah, me too.
And I do like those other two actors quite a bit. I mean, I should say I like Omar Sy quite a bit. And I'm okay with Kara Gee.
Omar Sy was great. I was really drawn to him.
Yeah, the writing was not great, but he's an incredibly charismatic guy, and I really enjoyed watching him almost all the time he was on screen. And Kara Gee bothered me less than she has in other things that I've seen her in.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I think the Omar Sy's character, I heard Perut, but I feel like
Perut,
the T.
Probably. Yeah, sure.
But it's French. The T should not be.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend that I know.
That
I know
character, I feel like if you, the writing is a struggle, but the time, like where he's placed in the movie and the role that he plays, is so essential for me not to emotionally have to abandon this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, it's a dog and I'm a dog person, so I'm invested.
Yeah.
And it hurt until Omar shows up, and then it's like, oh, kind of that breath of fresh air.
Yeah, yeah.
And from that moment moving forward, I think that's about where I landed on the cartoon spot.
Sure.
Where it's like he escapes and he's pulling up into Alaska and he's gonna be sold as a sled dog, and then Omar shows up and I was like, oh, this is a cartoon. I'm invested in this cartoon character, Buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wish Harrison Ford was in it more.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone with everything that the first hour of the movie was being cut to about 30 minutes and then give me an hour and a half to an hour.
More time with Harrison Ford and Buck. Yeah. With John and Buck.
John.
Yeah. I thought this was actually a very beautiful movie.
Yeah.
As far as like Earth porn goes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's working pretty well.
Yeah.
It's really, really beautiful.
I mean, there's a whole dog fight scene under the Northern Lights.
Oh yeah. It's pretty
beautiful.
Cool. Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was the
not complaining
scene,
over
yeah.
here.
Yeah, that was the scene specifically that, like, as a kid, that would have been so thrilling. That would have been like the peak of intensity that I could have handled. Because you had like the mean dog and you had Buck and they but yeah, like the whole every night scene, there's a bunch of scenes of like shots of John and Buck and it like look up at the stars and it or when they show up and on the cliffside and it just keeps it's amazing.
Yeah. It makes me want so badly to go to Alaska. I loved, so there was speaking of the way that this movie was shot in a lot of really, really lovely, lovely scenes. One I wanted to highlight in particular was the match dissolve montage where when Buck has gotten into the groove of being, you know, the sled dog. And then there's just dissolve after dissolve. And you see that, you know, it goes from day to night, night to day, like, you know, different like trees to plains to rivers to whatever, and like, and
like
it's just this sweeping
running.
And it's I think that whole sequence has got to be almost entirely animated, but it is just gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful, and the way that it's constructed is like is really nice. There's nothing really surprising or like virtuosic about it, but it's done so well. It's so lovely. I found myself being like, I'm in the spirit of this.
Yeah.
This is really nice.
Yeah.
I'm feeling the energy of this thing. It almost like it invites you into maybe for just a second what it feels like to be a dog who's just running.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
And feeling good about it.
So the emotional peak, like when I was the most in the movie, was that moment, but I was catapulted into that moment from the scene right before where Omar's character refuses to have Buck be the leader and then finally gives up and puts Buck in the leader position. And then the music swells and like Buck just kind of settles in, like his paws get ready. He leans forward a little bit and he's just like crouches down, and then all the other dogs behind him just like lock into place. The music swells and the woman Kara Gee.
Yeah.
Kara Gee's character is like, you might want to hold on to something. Feeling something's different.
Yeah.
And then it takes off. And that was when it was the most victorious moment. And I was 100% in Buck's mind for like that moment and then that montage afterwards. It worked really, really well.
Yeah, it was really great. I think the most comedically successful moment was when Buck, you know, wanders up to the. I mean, it was comedically successful to see the other dog refuse to take the lead.
Yeah,
and there was very, very satisfying because you could see there really. I mean, insofar as Buck has an arc, I would say the strongest portion of that arc was definitely from him basically being a kidnapped slave dog to becoming the leader of the pack. Like that was a good, like a really, really good arc. And it gets to this place that, he essentially finishes that arc when he takes his place at the front of the line.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of up to, you know, the sled driver and the rest of the dogs to like acknowledge that he's finished his arc, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was interesting because it was kind of the emotional climax of the film in many ways. And then everything that comes after, it's like it's kind of a different story at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, in fact, let's talk about that for a second because I find it fascinating that actually, if you consider this a two-hander, because it's Buck's story, but then also it is Harrison Ford's John, the character John's story. At that moment, we are after Buck has taken the lead, and then there's the sort of avalanche climax thing, which is silly. I mean, it's fun. It was really fun.
It was really fun.
It was really fun. But then also deeply silly when it match cuts from that to them coming into the
totally.
Like, give me a break.
I thought the avalanche was going to take out the town. I was so confused.
Yeah. No, it's very, very bizarre.
It was really quick. Yeah.
And then they're like, they're on time for the first time. Also, the whole on time thing doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, you guys are in, I mean, maybe this is just me being ignorant about like how frontiers worked, but I'm like, back when mail was being carried by sledge, you are not worried about time.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you're going as fast as you can because like you were the literally only link between these people and like the rest of the world. But like also you're riding a sled.
It's like, not necessarily about being on time. It's about like not dying.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like you're successful if you survive.
Yeah.
If you get there and you manage to have the mail still.
Yeah.
Like that's amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And so like this whole like he's never been on time. I'm like, I am not buying this. Yeah. Like this is a device that just like utterly failed for me. Or if that was like a true thing, if that was like a real, because I just don't believe it.
Yeah.
But if it was real, like I needed to be sold better. Like I needed someone to explain to me why being on time mattered to these people in Alaska.
Yeah.
Like, no, I feel like, yeah, this is like a give or take a month situation.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is, and then which was like the whole spine for the motivation behind the decision of match cutting from the avalanche to the town was like to try to pay off this idea of being on time, which I didn't buy at all.
Yeah.
So it was that was a bit of a kind of like a bit of a snort moment, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I with the avalanche scene, it was the weirdest thing because I knew how absurd it was. I knew like thematically and cinematically it made no sense. Like it was just silly, but like I had so much fun. It was kind of a Fast and the Furious moment for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where I was like, I know this is ridiculous, oh, but yeah, it's kind of so cool. Silly.
I mean,
because he like runs through the ice cave that I don't know how he knows it's there.
Once
but
again,
it is.
Cartoon.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Total cartoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is great, and you know, but very very silly. Anyway, so after that moment though, after they get into town, it then becomes a movie about him and John.
Yeah,
and then it becomes John's story because Buck doesn't really have anything left to do other than like become wild.
Yeah. I mean, I did kind of look at it as, you know, Buck needed to go through this to be the kind of dog he needed to be to teach John the lessons.
Yes.
So it was kind of Buck's movie
and then
John's movie.
Yeah.
With the emotional ending coming to the spoilers, the death of John, mm-hmm. And the
John dies at the end,
and then the death of like Buck's previous life, mm-hmm. and then they kind of move on. So like I see everything that they were doing,
the sort of big picture,
yeah. Like I can see in the writer's room on the whiteboard what all the beats were.
Yeah.
So I totally get it, but I still wanted more John.
Yeah.
He could have been flushed because it was a tortured man, and he doesn't we don't ever get him, like, I don't know. There was no emotional payoff for John, because he was going to go back and try and his son died and it ruined his marriage, and he was going to go back and try and restore the life that he once had, but he doesn't get that chance. So
is killed by a cartoon character.
I mean, more so than the dog. Yep. This guy is a cartoon character.
Oh my gosh! And when Dan Stevens showed up, I was so excited because I love Dan Stevens no matter what.
Sure,
I'm always gonna love Dan Stevens when he shows up on screen. He's just such a wonderful person.
And then you put that mustache on him, and what's not to love? Yeah.
But he was such a cartoon. It was amazing. Like, such a mustache twirling, like, cartoon villain.
Part of me wonders if this movie was sold to Harrison Ford as one thing and Dan Stevens is a completely different thing. Because it doesn't really feel
they don't
like
seem
they
like they're occupying the same movie.
No, definitely not.
And it's also very strange that, there's a lot of sort of credulity straining, but for the most part, I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, the time thing was a bug for me. But like, also, him just finding them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of
thousands upon thousands upon millions of acres of wilderness.
That he doesn't have a map for.
Millions of acres of unmapped wilderness, and he just finds them.
I didn't even think about that.
I was just like, because, I mean, you know it's going to happen.
Totally.
I mean, because it's very obvious. Yeah. Like, he goes into the place drunk and upset, and he finds the map, and he sees the line on the floor that is literally nothing. Yeah. It's literally drawn on nothing. Yeah. It's drawn on wood that is not mapped. And then deduces from that. Like, he lays out his own map, and he's like, I know where they're going.
No, you don't. He doesn't know
you
where he's going.
You for sure don't know. Yeah, nobody knows where they're going. So the fact that, like, he found them seems like, to me, an act of God.
Because because he also has not proven himself to be marvelous outdoorsman.
He's not like a towering intellectual or an incredible frontiersman. He's a goof and a violent, angry, impatient goof. And I do not believe that he just found them.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you realize this. This was the refrigerator logic. It wasn't logic. It was just I realized that Buck killed the lead dog.
Oh yeah.
And the cartoon character bad guy.
Okay, first of all, he didn't kill either of them because this is a cartoon, and just like listen.
Okay.
Just like Harrison Ford or John slams the door before he can get his curse word out, son of a slam.
Yes, yes.
We see Spitz. Is it Spitz?
Something like that.
Whatever. We see him limp off into the wilderness, into the snow.
Yeah, isn't the assumption that he dies?
Well, sure, maybe. He's not part of the pack anymore. But Buck didn't kill him. Buck just beat him. And then he went off and died. Or went off and found another pack.
I mean,
but Buck didn't
but,
kill
but,
him.
But Buck
did not kill him. And then with
what the, about
with,
the bad guy
with
who
Dan
fought,
Stevens,
who he pushes into
he
a burning
pushes
building,
into a burning building,
and then it collapses.
The burning building killed him. which who set the building on fire?
He did.
Yeah,
he did.
So he basically
killed himself.
So this is important. I'm actually being serious here.
Because
if you're making we established at the very beginning, this is a kid's movie. If it's a kid's movie, your hero actually is like on paper, as you're like in the writer's room, figuring out, or I don't know, there's probably not a writer's room for this. It's probably just a guy on his computer in his
house.
As he's piecing apart this scene, or maybe he turns in a draft and the notes come back and they say, listen, you got to rework this. We can't have Buck killing somebody. He literally can't do it.
Yeah.
So
it's the reason Superman, Batman, then it's in their code. They don't kill.
Exactly.
Because they're kids iconic.
With them, it's like a moral stance. And with these kinds of movies, it's baked into the ethos of being a kids movie.
Mm, sure.
Like any Disney movie, right? Like anytime the villain dies, it's because they fell off a cliff.
No.
You know. The hero never kills the villain.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen. Anyway.
Scar gets torn apart by a bunch of hyenas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You get it.
I get it.
You get it. Yeah. So anyway, that's that was interesting. I want to point out one other thing that I really, really liked in that climactic, hilariously unearned moment, or earned but logical moment of Dan Stevens' character showing up, Hal, his name is Hal.
Hal
showing up, the gun stuff, him, whatever, asking where's the gold or whatever, and John pulls the gold out of his pocket and then, like, tosses it on the ground and says, it's everywhere. I love that moment. I love that moment. That was a big Harrison Ford moment for me where I was like, the weary weight of the world on this, the weight of the world on this weary man's shoulders as he has to explain to this evil villain,
yeah,
that the what he's willing to kill for is free to take,
yeah,
by anyone. Just go and take
go
it.
Go get it. Yeah,
yeah, it's, yeah, right there. I love that.
I was distracted by how much money he was putting back into the river. And he just threw at this guy because I sold jewelry for a while. Oh, yeah, and no. I bought gold.
It's pretty expensive.
And I was like,
isn't it like at like $1,300 an ounce right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, it hovers between like 13 and 16.
Yeah.
So I'm like, and that's like pure gold. Yeah. You're looking at 24 carats. I was like, because when
Buck pulls up that giant.
Oh my gosh. I was dying. Cause like you can get a flake of golds and yeah, it's worth a couple $100.
Yeah.
You got these full nuggets, and I'm like, I cannot. I just.
It's a lot of money.
I don't understand.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, anyway. I genuinely wasn't. I was so distracted by that I was not thinking about what John was saying.
I was trying to develop. It was very distracting. I remember trying to develop a story at one point where someone finds like 1,000 pounds of gold. Just 1,000 pounds of gold, like buried under their house. And like after they dig it all up, and they like go to find out how much it's worth. It's like $200 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like if you can just have 1,000 pounds of gold, you have all the money.
Yeah, just all the money. Yeah.
It's so much money. Yeah, I was also distracted by that. I found myself just like, John, go look at the river.
Yeah.
Go get that big rock. He just put it back. You can find it's right there. It's not gonna go away. It's fine. Yeah, there's nothing more exciting than those prospecting moments in this genre of movie. Like,
yeah, it's great.
No wonder everyone flocked out west. To,
yeah,
like,
everyone wants to be that
no
person.
No wonder the gold rush.
Yeah,
right. No wonder.
Yeah,
we're feeling that now. You know, so far removed.
That's so true. Oh man. Yeah, anyway. I mean, how far would I travel to get that big rock that Buck had in his mouth?
I would go to the end of the world. If I had confidence that I could just find a rock like that in the river, I'd be like, you tell me
I don't
where
care
that
where
river
that
is.
River is.
I don't take it.
Take away all my cars. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I'm getting there.
I will find a way. I will learn how to backpack.
That's so funny.
Oh man.
Okay, all right. So there's something I saw in your notes.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the critic part of our notes,
mm-hmm,
that I actually liked.
I'm gonna guess what it is.
Go ahead.
The big black dog.
It was the big black dog.
Okay.
Why didn't you like the big black dog?
It just felt like a needless literalization to me. Like
in a kids movie.
Mm-hmm. Even so, this is one of those situations. So my three main points are. So there are three main criticisms I have of this movie. One is that I'm not sold on CG dogs. I think that you could have done sure. This whole movie with real dogs. Think it would have been harder? Think there's things you couldn't have gotten away with?
Yeah.
Think it would have been better.
Yeah.
Like, a lot better. I think there's way too much voiceover narration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way too much. And I
knew you were like
just
about halfway through the movie when you hear his voice like the third time.
Yeah.
I knew I was like, ooh, Jordan's going to have a hard time.
Well, also, I mean, so there's a lot of problems with it. One, it's feeding us a lot of stuff that we don't need to be fed. Two, it's also from a character who we mostly don't see for most of the movie for like the first half of the movie.
Yeah.
So how does he know what to, like, it doesn't make any sense. And three, how are we hearing this narration?
He's dead. Yeah.
There's nobody to get this story.
When his voice closes out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's like, some people say it's a legend. And I'm like, wait, how do you know that?
You're dead, man. And your notes are gone.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I mean, I can buy that he's like journaling or
sure.
whatever, but unless there's a way to get that journal back to somebody. But no, that thing is moldering in the ground. That thing is gone. There is no, he's gone. Yeah. He's gone. Yeah. All of his thoughts are gone. So like I had a hard time.
It could have been a letter.
Yeah.
It could have been a letter.
If there was any way for, you know, and even if there, I don't know, there's got to be, like, if you're going to do that, it's a framing device. You have to sell it somehow. Like maybe, you know, another prospector comes along and finds the journal, whatever, something. But like, I don't want to just keep hearing a voice that is connected to nothing now, you know? Yeah. So that's troubling. And then the third thing is that it's trying way too hard to be a kid's movie. And we both agree that Dan Stevens seems like he was kind of coming from a different movie. I think he is evidence of too much of a kid's movie and trying too hard to be a kid's movie. You could not do those things or not do them so much, and it would still be a really effective kid's movie.
Totally. Okay, and the Big Black Dog was one of those things.
I believe, yes. It was a bit of a pandering thing. Like, oh, they're not going to get it. Like, we have to show them what the wild is.
Sure.
I'm like, that dog doesn't even look like Buck. Like, it just felt really forced and unnecessary. It felt like a late note, you know? It's like, what if the wild was
this big spirit dog?
And I just thought it was...
So wild. I enjoyed... The reason that I enjoyed it was because there was kind of an arc of Buck was afraid of it, learns to listen to it, and then for the last half hour of the movie, it doesn't show up.
Sure.
So I kind of enjoyed it. It was fine
in the way it was used. Like, if you're going to have a big black spirit dog to represent the quote-unquote wild.
Call of the wild.
Sure.
Yeah.
Then, like, it's, you know, in execution, I don't really have an issue. I just didn't like the fact that it was there at all. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair.
And I think, I think that Buck was a little overhumanized. You know, I don't like that he disapproved of John's drinking the point that he literally took it away from him. I'm like, what?
Yeah, and
what is the context there? Like, what past experience? Part of me wondered if I had missed a couple of minutes in the beginning where
drinking.
Yeah,
you definitely did not.
Did not. Yeah, like Bradley Whitford was like a mean drunk, but he wasn't.
No.
So yeah, that was based on nothing.
Yeah, there was also the like. He was just too smart. Mm. Like let me this timber wolf is drowning. Let me jump. I'm gonna try and pull the tree out. The branch breaks. I'm gonna like secure myself against it and then pull him out. Like, I get that Buck needed to be the one that saved him, I guess, but like it was a little bit too, like, if he's not talking to us, then it was, and we're supposed to believe that this is like a real dog,
like a genuine animal.
Yeah, yeah. There was a couple moments that the humanizing of him, including the taking away the alcohol, where it was like, oh, you're a human.
You're a human in a dog's body.
In a dog form. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. So I think I'm kind of finished.
About
this movie. I enjoyed it.
Will there be a sequel?
I wonder whether there's just going to be a children's version remake of White Fang. Which the original White Fang with Ethan Hawke, I remember loving as a kid. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen that.
You should go back and see it.
I'm confident I've never seen it. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a one-and-done kind of movie.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll show it to my kids, maybe.
I wouldn't be...
Like, if it's I'm not going to turn away, but...
Yeah. This isn't a movie I would avoid showing to my kids.
Yeah.
Which is saying something, because there's a lot of freaking movies I will avoid showing to my kids.
Yeah. You just the whole time be like, see him? That is Harrison Ford. That's all you're saying the whole time.
He shot first.
So what are we talking about on Monday?
We're talking about...
Saturday for those premium peeps.
Yeah. Better Off Dead.
Why are we talking about Better Off Dead?
Because it was just my birthday, and you actually recommended it, because...
Well, yeah.
You were over at my house.
Yeah.
for a little shindig.
Yes.
That was a surprise to me.
It was, and I kept that surprise. Man.
You did such a good job.
I'm not a good secret keeper.
Well, apparently you are, because there have been a couple of major secrets that you've kept from me.
That's
that
true.
That I've learned recently.
That's true.
We also recently found out that one of our friends is pregnant. That was a secret that he had kept for several weeks.
But I have more gray hairs because of it. It was so hard.
It's fine. Anyway, so CJ and some people are over and we're doing some birthday celebrations, and I decide to put on Better Off Dead because it is a sort of casual tradition. And I say casual because it's not something I do every year, but I have done a number of years on my birthday. I like to watch Better Off Dead with friends because it came out in the year 1985, which is the year that I was born. So,
yeah, I mean,
so sometimes I have to watch Better Off Dead on my birthday.
I get it. So we're going to talk about Better Off Dead.
So we're going to talk about Better Off Dead next week.
And if you haven't seen Better Off Dead or it's been a while, then take the weekend.
Go take a look at it.
Go take a look
it's
and then
so
join
good.
Join our – I'm guessing it's going to be a pretty hard nerd out for the next episode.
I don't know where it's available. I own it on Blu-ray.
I
don't know.
I'm not about this, but – I found it on YouTube, the entire movie, for free.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm
all about that. This is a movie that should just be – this should be public domain by now.
I mean, it was – like there was obviously no – I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But the whole movie was on –
So go watch it. Go watch it on YouTube.
On YouTube. Yeah, just search Better Off Dead. It'll give you the full movie.
And in the meantime, also, please leave a review if you haven't yet. We'd love to get a review from you. Also, share this show with a friend. Just, you know, don't share it on social media because nobody likes getting links on Facebook. Just tell somebody about it. If you haven't told someone about Nerd Critic recently, you know, talking about movies, if you're talking about a movie we've talked about as well, you should just bring it up. Be like, you know what? These two guys I listen to, they are... I don't know what you're going to say, but you'll come up with something. I have confidence.
Yeah. Hopefully it's in a positive tone and you recommend it.
But you know what? Any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So talk about us.
I want CJ, if you have it on hand, I would love you to read it. And if not, I can read it. But you shared with me a lovely message that we got from one of our listeners recently, and I would love to read that because that's what we do.
Yeah, so I got an email. So on our website, on nerdcriticpodcast.com, there's a Contact Us button. And this person, whose name they put in as Hammy Balanced Padawan, which is also their tag on social media, wrote the subject line, "Just wanted to say thank you." Do you want me to read it or would you like to?
I'll read it.
Go for it. I mean, it was addressed at you.
Yeah.
So you should read it.
I'm blushing, but I'm going to read it. It says, "Hi there. I started listening to your podcast the other day and have been going through all your recent episodes. Really enjoying both of your perspectives on movies. I was just listening to your top 10 movies of 2019 episode, and I had to stop and send a message because you, Jordan, I believe, started talking about The Rise of Skywalker and how it's hard to revisit the criticism because it's too painful. I am so relieved to hear you say that because I'm a new Star Wars fan that came into this franchise through the sequel trilogy. Many of us newer fans have felt so brokenhearted for months now about this movie because it feels like choices were made not for people who actually love the sequel trilogy but those who have been complaining about it. And you saying we deserve to feel how MCU fans felt about Endgame was just so on point. It was refreshing to hear an older fan who was also affected the same way. So thank you, and I'm excited to listen to your Little Women episode next as I continue binging your episodes," which is just the best thing ever. Also, Hammy, or Balanced Padawan, I may or may not have spent a good chunk of time at one point binge reading your Twitter feed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I thought I was a Star Wars fan.
Oh, man.
Let me say this. I thought I was a Last Jedi fan. This person has real, like, fan game.
Yeah.
I was very impressed. Like, I mean, I don't know how Twitter works. I don't Twitter, like, at all. And so I'm not really in that game. I get it. I don't know, like, a lot of the conventions, though, and I noticed that Balanced Padawan, you retweet a lot. And the stuff you retweet is really good, but also your actual tweets are really good too. And so it was a long time of me scrolling through your Twitter feed. Anyway, that's
great. Anytime you can get Jordan on social media is a big deal. So yeah. Well done, Hammy. Or Balanced
also, Padawan. Also, the thing that was the coolest about that is by scrolling through your Twitter feed, Balanced Padawan, I discovered a robust community of new Star Wars lovers.
Oh.
And that was pretty exciting. Like, I was like, oh, man, like, I could get lost in this rabbit hole. This is not something I was super familiar with because I don't spend time in that sort of environment. It was pretty awesome.
It's really cool to hear because I guess that I technically would be part of this too. Obviously not to the level of Balanced Padawan here, but like to hear like I'm a new Star Wars fan and for somebody to say that. I came into this franchise from like the new movies.
Yeah.
Which most people it's like, oh, if you ain't an OG, you ain't a G at all. Oh, but yeah. Like it's cool to hear like, no, this is new for me. This is exciting.
I'm going on record as saying new fans are more important than me. And the older fans.
I mean,
way more important.
Sure, I can see that.
The franchise is now yours, Balanced Padawan.
Yeah.
Like, treat it well. Do with it what you will. It's not ours anymore. Yeah. Like, I mean, anyway, okay, I'm done. That was like such a highlight that message was such a highlight.
I sent that message to you on the day that we had your birthday party. That's so it was a little birthday gift.
A little, yes. All right. Well, I think we're just about ready to wrap up here. There's a very special someone that we need to thank. Who is that person?
Michael Baumiller.
That's right.
For the wonderful music.
Yes.
Very special person for very special music.
Yes.
Thank you, and everybody, please remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.